Hi, and welcome to a new series of podcasts focused on real estate, where we're going to take a forward look at the offices sector through the eyes of both the investor and the occupier. It will be hosted by me, Lottie Tolman, operations lead for the offices sector at Cushman & Wakefield, and self-confessed transformation enthusiast / geek.
And me, Richard Womack, head of West End Capital Markets and real estate advisor at Cushman & Wakefield. So for today, we're going to explore the effect of e-commerce on the office sector. And to help us do that, we're going to look back at recent events in the retail sector, where there's been a seismic negative shift in fortunes. Retail comprised over half the entire value of the UK commercial property sector in 2004. But by 2020, this is now less than a quarter. Many retail investors saw the warning signs, but have still been surprised by the recent scale of the declines in their fortunes. And so, Lottie, what's going to happen today?
Our guests today are two leading thinkers in the retail and office sectors, Lara Marrero and Richard Pickering. Lara is Principal and Strategy Director at Gensler, where she co-leads the global retail practice. Lara works with both retail brands and a variety of retail and office developers to create the ecosystems and places that engage people across their work styles and lifestyles. Richard is our Chief Strategy Officer here in the UK, and as part of that, he founded and runs our Futures Programme, which is our response to rapid industry change. He speaks and publishes regularly on the future of real estate. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hi, Lottie.
Okay, into the first question. Lara, let me turn to you, if I may. In reference to the shift underway to the office sector, perhaps you could talk us through what has happened for retail and its journey so that the office sector could learn from that.
Sure. I think if we look back at what retail was and the role it played in our lives, we can look back to the early 1950s where we started this this age of efficiency, where it was all about kind of rolling out and implementing stores, globalization, and ultimately the adage of more stores, more stuff. In that period of time between 1950 and the early noughts, we also had the dawn of the credit card, which eventually became my best friend. It let us buy and consume as many products as our homes could store. And then the dawn of e-commerce came online, and we saw this double barrel digital revolution. The first didn't go as intended, but there was a lot of innovation that came about, albeit slightly early. The second is when they really started to realize how online could really serve convenience. And that's really where we started to see the role of physical change. We went in about the early noughts to about 2018 into this age of experience, the digital experience and then the physical experience. Well, we really started to look at how space could deliver more than just products, but actually we'd see these wow factors coming into stores. We'd see interesting installations. We'd even have, you know, grocery testers. We would have everything from making sure that when you went in, you had all of your senses completely heightened, whether it be the fragrance that was permeating through the space, or even the DJs that were pumping the loudest music imaginable. But all of these experiences, while it gave people a chance to connect with the brand and understand the lifestyles that the brand brought about, what we started to see was that people were really craving these authentic experiences. And that came from the advent of social media and people constantly being connected to people online, but really looking for how they could connect to people and places in the physical realm. And that's really where we started the age of belonging. And now more than ever, post-pandemic, we're seeing the need to drive purpose, resilience, sustainability, and align these brands really aligning with purpose and social justice, inclusivity, all of these issues that really matter to the people and also matter to the communities.
And Richard Pickering, I just wondered if you have some observations on any parallels in the office sector here.
Yeah, look, I think there's obviously going to be a lot of parallels because a lot of what Lara's talking to here is societal trends and the way that we're growing up as a as a human race together. So I think there's bound to be parallels. And I was quite taken by Lara's language about age of efficiency, because obviously that's something that has very distinct parallels with the office model, in that we've been trying to push more people into less space for a long time now. But look, I agree, there's been a couple of catalytic moments probably. One is sort of as we move from the kind of 1970s through to modern day, a massive black swan development of the mass adoption of the internet in our lives and how we operate our businesses. And mainly that was seen in the initial phases of that as an efficiency tool or a way to communicate better. But it's obviously taken a radically different path now. I think the commonality here that's caused by that is technology, particularly the internet, has sucked out some elements of both shopping and working from the historic homes to the actual home via the use of the Amazon app and via Zoom. And that has meant that everything else has had to innovate in order to stay relevant, right? So typically that has been achieved, I agree with Lara, by moving up the excitement and experience curve as time's gone on. You know, in that context, retail obviously has had a difference historically, and it's been a consumer-focused industry. But, you know, workplace has been moving in that direction for some time now also. And I think particularly the co-working revolution kicked us on a few steps on that journey. And in the last year, we now have a genuine alternative to office work through telecommunicating and telecommuting. And that, I think, has unescapable parallels with e-commerce. And I think also there are unescapable parallels in terms of the solution for real estate, which is to have or present differentiated experiences for both consumers and workers, which you just can't get at home. So I think parallel issue, parallel solution, Rich, I would say.
Thank you both. That's a really helpful and thoughtful intro to the topic. So I appreciate that. But when we're thinking about the offices sector and the change that needs to tackle, a lot of what you've just said, I think, has already called it out. But before we jump the gun and assume that absolutely everything must change, let's explore what those drivers for change are and why we must change. If I could maybe pass that back to you, Richard, to expand on some of what you just said.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a really simple answer, I think, Lottie. It's about relevance. So, you know, offices need to adapt to changing work patterns in order to stay relevant. So if work patterns stay the same, then offices can stay the same. There's no problem with that. Look, I'd be interested in, maybe it's a slightly rhetorical point, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, we know that workers are demanding more flexibility in their schedules. There's now a ton of data on this in the last year, which suggests that most office workers favour a hybrid working model of, say, 2 to 3 days a week in the office. So if you leave it to the consumer of real estate, the people using your offices, then the office needs to change on that basis. I think the question that we need to ask, probably to sense check that conclusion, is will organisations support that desire? And at the moment, I think that's less clear and it's more nuanced at an organisational and a sector level. So there are some organisations, as examples of this, that either see great productivity in being physically close to each other all the time, or equally, they might fear the loss of control from being apart some of the time. And at the other end of the spectrum, that there are those which are willing to countenance a wholly virtual model that needs no real estate. In the short term, I think the answer is likely to come down to power imbalances in these industries. So, you know, getting a paycheck still remains really important for people, especially as we come out of a recession. So I think in the short run, most employers will have the whip hand to determine the occupational model that best suits their personal viewpoint on their industry. Ultimately, though, I think the hybrid model will become the norm, because it only takes a few organisations to break ranks and shift the market to attract the best talent by giving them what they want. So, you know, an analogy I would draw is it's a bit like what WeWork has done to the office market. You know, most office investors were perfectly happy to sit on long commitments and offer no real employee end user value proposition. Market disruption now means that most office investors are considering shorter terms and also offering value-added operational type services on top of the basic provision of real estate. So same principle entirely in the labour market. And I think ultimately that will be a force for change in the medium to long term.
Thank you. And Lara, I've heard you speak previously really powerfully on the power of choice, which applies to retail, but I think also applies to offices. If you'd like to explain that a little bit more for the purposes of the podcast.
Sure. I think it's important, you know, looking at where retail's been and talking about the idea of a consumer, you know, keep in mind that retail's been in this hybrid experience mode for over 20 years now. And so we shouldn't discount the fact that we have a great amount of experience allowing people to have choice. And, you know, people are still buying things in physical locations and buying things online. It comes down to the power of choice and how brands are able to value their customers' time. Each of us have 24 hours a day, and, you know, time's everything we have and everything we don't. And so really allowing consumers to have that power of choice just shows that you're understanding the behavior of consumers, because you're giving them a variety of different platforms as a brand to meet them where their needs are. So whether or not they're shopping on their computer or while they're on a conference call, all of us have done it, come on. Whether or not they're walking down the street and realize they need to buy something, they can go on their phone and buy it and have it delivered, or they can stop in and pick it up and click and collect. Digital has enabled the ability to use the physical space in new and exciting ways. And I think that when we start to look at the most important thing about physical retail is the ability to create that relationship between the brand, the employee, and the consumer. So how does that translate into physical space for office? An office is a brand. Let's not forget an employer, they are a brand. And so how do they attract and retain the best employees if they're not sharing their culture with their employees? If they're not finding ways to enrich the lives and really communicate their values when they're in their physical environments? The purpose of place has to be about driving that engendering of the culture and driving that sense of belonging in order to keep people going there. Because if you can do anything anywhere and our work styles and lifestyles are coming together, then it's about really driving that purpose and creating that relevance of place.
Laura, are there some good examples of how some of these retailers have moved their offer on in this digital age?
Yeah, in terms of looking at how retailers have driven purpose in place, look no further than companies like Rafa, who have really focused on their consumer and have become the end-all be-all of a place where people who are into cycling can meet up with other people who like to cycle, can actually buy products, can get products repaired, can have a coffee pre or post cycle, or even become a part of a Rafa cycle club. So even if I'm traveling from city to city and I actually want to cycle, I can go there and find a community of people who think like me, where I might not know anybody and still have this community that I can go cycle with. Even the act of being able to find these different underpinnings of spaces to be able to attract people in that are like-minded, that's one way that they were able to create that sense of belonging and community in their space. In a contrasting way, not, both actually doing very similar things, but in a different manner, look at Nike. You know, Nike not only has their House of Innovation model that really celebrates all of the different ways they bring innovation to life to improve on the performance of athletes and also to improve on the products that they're developing. But this is really something that they started to look at how they could improve on making it more convenient and making it easier for people to access their products and their services. So everything from having the flagship House of Innovation to having the Nike ID store that really curates the product mix for that particular community and those five postcodes where that community might or where that store might serve. But also looking at the different types of activations that they've been doing. So the Nike Recreation Center, really to help folks in Chicago learn more about upcycling and sustainability and really having that store serve as a platform for education. inspiring different people to the business of fashion, but also just helping people understand the role design has in our everyday lives. So all of these types of experiences, though very different, are actually more catered to the needs of how the brand can serve the needs of their customer or their target within that particular community.
Thanks, Lara. And that makes a lot of sense. So in retail, we understand the brand and the community the brand serves. And if we think about that pivoting to offices, in that instance, the community is the workforce and the brand is the physical location they're housed in, so the workplace.
And Richard, I was just going to turn to you and just to see how far behind you think the office sector is in this revolution and evolution of place and people, and what do you think it needs to do to evolve and catch up and to avoid some of the negative challenges that the retail sector has faced?
I think it is behind. I definitely think it's behind. I think it's behind for a couple of reasons. One is that digital disruption came quicker to the retail sector than it has to the work kind of arena. And secondly, I think because in the interaction of businesses, things happen more slowly than in direct to consumer or consumer facing business models. So I think retail is ahead of the office sector. And I think that's great for the office sector in that it allows us in who work in the office sector to learn from some of the principles that the retail retailers and retail investors have learned from over the past few years. And I think to go back to where I think, you know, kind of significant learning here, and Lara kind of touched on it a little bit, I think fundamentally you've got to consider what the purpose of an office is and how does it drive value. I think it's in two ways. It's, as Lara would say, in the place or the land, and it's also in the improvements upon the land in the form of the buildings. Increasingly, it's the place that's important. It's how do you attract people to a central place where they're going to combine their thinking, carry out activities together and engage with each other. And that's going to be critically important to the future of the office. And then secondly, in terms of the building on it, I think we've made, well, historically, the building has been just somewhere to keep dry. It's been a wrapper for those activities. And I think increasingly, as Lara says, it has a much bigger role to play in that. It has a role to play as a permeable membrane that it sits in between consumers and workers. And it's also a place to exhibit the brand and to put a degree of a kind of stake in the ground around it. I think increasingly we've talked about, or in this session so far, we've talked about retail and workplace as separate things. But increasingly, if retail is about brand engagement and work is about brand engagement, then the two might start to become less different in the future and blur. And I think we're going to start to see a number of hybrid or crossover products which reflect that. But either way, the physical ecosystem of working and shopping is almost certainly going to be much more intertwined in the future. And I think we need to start to anticipate that now in the form of some of our large development projects. Location is going to be very important around that. So is the local ecosystem. And I think that increasingly we're going to see those which can deliver an incredible experience do better, and those which can't, unfortunately, start to lack relevance.
And Lara, do you have a comment on that?
No, I couldn't agree with you more on this, because I think at the end of the day, when we're starting to look at how we're looking at the war for physical assets and looking at what their role is and their relevance, we have to understand that people's, you know, it used to be work, live, and play, but our work styles and our lifestyles have been merging together, which means that as that merge has happened, the role of place is going to shift. But not just that, our behaviors and consumption patterns. It's not going to just be about buying. You know, we're going to look at the rental economy coming forward. We're going to look at the recycling and the sustainability principles of being able to say owning less and putting product back into the market. We're going to be looking at people wanting to spend time together doing activities and not just going to bars and drinking, because we also have to acknowledge the fact that there are less Gen Zs drinking than ever before. I mean, there is health and wellness as an activator. All of these things are playing a big role in the way that space is changing and the actual underpinnings of what when we walk down the street in 10 years, what is the ground plane going to look like? It's going to be rather different.
It feels to me like the investor and the corporate world employing people in the UK office sector have to stay light on their feet here, have to be to adapt and pretty quickly to these emerging demands. And one of the things, just with an investor's hat on for a moment, is the long lease model, long a very big feature of the UK investment market, is clearly under threat. And I just wondered, Richard, if I could turn to you around that, and how is the investor going to be protected around that shift to flexibility in terms of the short leases?
Yeah, look, first, I think you're right, Rich. I mean, I think we've obviously seen that in the retail market, and now with CVAs, I mean, it's essentially no covenant. And in the office market, we've seen terms come down and down and down. To the other end of the spectrum, you have some WeWork products that are kind of judged by the minute. So, you know, we are going to see increasing flexibility in commitments, contractual commitments. So whether investors like it or not, that's going to happen, and that's going to be reflected to some degree in the pricing. Now, I would agree. I don't think that's a unanimously bad thing, though, provided that investors can get their heads around how certain the income is going to be going forward. And it's going to be much more, I think, about making a kind of equity type investment in real estate than maybe the kind of fixed income type commitments we've been looking at previously. But the plus side is obviously that provides you with an opportunity to add on additional services and new commercial lines, but it also allows you to accelerate growth and review rent upwards in a manner that's not been probably possible in recent years. I think either way, real estate investors are going to have to get used to being more aligned with the end user in terms of the risk profile of what they do, and therefore align their interests to the end user to make sure that the places are successful.
So instead of valuing a single lease income stream, it might be rental plus operational income going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it already is. I mean, not in large part. I think most of the income from a serviced office centre is still real estate income. I think about 10% is currently some sort of service added value service provision. But I do think that a lot of the income is going to be less protected than it is currently in the future. And for that reason, yes, real estate investors are going to have to work harder to align their interests with those of the people who use their places.
I would also add to this that in order to really understand what's really transpiring, you need to also understand how the brands themselves are changing what they value and how they measure success and performance. And for as long as people are measuring performance just on footfall or units per transaction, those are not all the metrics that exist for why retailers have physical space. And so to quantify the lease value of a physical environment is going to change when the brands find a different purpose for that physical value. And so just like the retailers themselves, the brands themselves had to take the terms. For example, many, many brands, if they wanted to be in prime real estate, they'd have to take two additional locations that might have been in less prime real estate. But now, just like the consumers took control of the retail brands, now the retail brands are taking a little bit more control, which they have not had, of the conversations around where they want to be, because they are armed with data. They know exactly who their customer is. And that being able to say, we've got X amount of footfall, now a lot of these retailers are going to say, yes, but by whom, at what time, what else are they bringing? They're going to ask a lot more questions. So the entire market needs to get a lot smarter around what the purpose of place is for the brands in order to deliver salient information that will help brands decide to go there, whether it's for a day, a week, a month, a year, 5, 7, or 10.
Great. And I think that's a really good segue into some of the work that I know that you've been doing, Lara, looking at human-centered design. which I know is a passion of yours, and indeed the World Economic Forum Jobs of the Future Index has the snappily titled Workplace Environment Architect at number 5 in their top 10 professions emerging in the wake of the pandemic. So Lara, kind of back to you on the human, this sort of human element of design, human-centered design, if you're able to tell us a little bit about one of your projects that relates to office space, if possible, on how some of those ideas that you've just discussed translate into office real estate.
Absolutely. Richard said it already, and Richard and I have the benefit of sharing a vision about the word relevance being so incredibly important as we start looking at the experiences of today, but also how we're designing for the world of tomorrow. And one of the things that we've been able to do is, whether or not you're a workplace tenant or you're an amenities tenant, when working with developers, both of those groups are trying to attract and defend. So they're trying to attract the best talent and defend the talent they have. So really starting to look at how you can design buildings, how you can reposition buildings, how you can look at a mix of uses that help provide a location where people can maximize their time in a place where belonging is happening, not just within the tenant's lease line, but actually within the community that the developer can help to provide. And the way we've been doing this is through experience strategies where we look at who the target tenants are going to be. We look at the amenity provisions that these potential tenants might put within their demise or might be seeking for a building to already have available to them in a 30-second, one minute, 5-10 minute radius. We start to look at how if we're looking at over the course of a day, how people's needs for space will change, and starting to look at how not to create so many fixed elements within the ground floor of a space, but rather how can spaces change over time? So if you have people in the future that are shift working, let's say, they still have a food provision that's available to them that's just as healthy as what might be available during the core business hours of the 9 to 5. Instead of it being the 5 to 9 or in reverse or whatnot. So I think it's really important that as we look ahead, looking at human needs and what make people choose the companies they work for, the locations they choose to work in, as well as the places that they shop and the communities they want to be a part of, all of these are going to be playing a great deal of emphasis in how we're developing our buildings. And so an example is one that we worked on with a developer in Melbourne called Charter Hall. And the building is called 555 Collins Street. And they came to us asking us to help with their interiors. And they walked out saying, actually, we want you to do this human-centered design thing. We want to go along with this. We want to understand it. We really believe in engaging with people and really helping people feel like they're a part of place. And we took them on the journey, and for 3 months, we didn't draw the architecture of this building, and we were collaborating. It was Gensler in collaboration with Cox Architecture, and we led them through the design of an experience and saying, when you actually look at the different types of people that will be working in this place or visiting this place, the tenant workers, as well as your staff that service the building. And we went through a really rigorous process by which we started to identify when you put all of the needs for these communities, you start to see how ground plane has to work so hard. And then you start to see there's a public space, there's a semi-public space, and there's a private space as you build the stack. When you start looking at the freelance economy, do you want them in your private space or do you want a semi-public space available? So as we started to create the stack, we started to look at the space over time. We started looking and saying, just because this is an office building, it's adjacent to a huge hospitality opportunity. How do we look at creating a space that provides food and beverage opportunities, learning opportunities, so that there's a portion of the building that is really focused on activation and has a day-to-night cadence? We also looked at bringing a premium restaurant in and having a coffee bar that was actually built into the stairs so that you could feel the work style and lifestyles really merging in this building and not in an inauthentic way. Like when you walk in, you feel like this is a place where you can choose where you want to be, and that anywhere you choose to be is encouraged.
Thank you. And there's a few things that I'm going to take away today. And the first is this power of choice that has, as a result of the pandemic, been bestowed onto the office worker in a way that it wasn't before.
Absolutely.
The workplace and the employer now needs to create a really compelling narrative around the office and curating or creating a space that gives rise to authentic interactions. It's clear that there's a lot of similarities between offices and retail, but of course there's some differences too. I mean, for instance, we willingly invite retail into our homes. Some of our most intimate family moments are interspersed with it. We browse the Boxing Day sales while we pass around the quality street to our extended family. But with our work and our careers, it's harder to do that level of multitasking, and it doesn't work in the same way. Working from home has worked for many of us, but not all of us. But what we have been gifted, albeit poorly, unfortunate circumstances, is the opportunity for a pause point and a chance to reflect. In my personal life, this is normally something I do on New Year's Eve. In the countdown to midnight, I like to think about what I want from the year ahead. And for offices, office investors and occupiers, I feel like at the moment they're living and breathing this countdown to midnight, those few minutes. Change is ahead, it's clear, and how often do we really get the opportunity to reinvent ourselves for the better? But thank you so much, everyone, for joining today. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear all your insights, and you've set the bar really high for our future episodes and future guests. So thank you, I think, for that. It's been great.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.